Marawai, why did you think a plastic bag and tape was a solid window replacement after that smash and grab? And why does it sound like a kite every time you hit Puma 60Ks? Marawai, why aren't you insured with Santam, the insurer that covers theft or attempted hijacking? Get your car covered online in just 2 minutes or SMS cover to 36101. Santam, this is freedom. T's and C's apply. Santam is an authorized FSP, a licensed non-life insurer and controlling company for its group companies.
Good day and welcome to another episode of Driving with Jana. Today we have Auto Trader CEO George Minney joining us from our Joburg studio while I'm down in our Cape Town office. Welcome George, it's so good to see you.
It's really good to see you, Janine. I think the last time I saw you, we were in Cape Town, and it was a bit of a gloomy day, I think.
It was.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably 2 or 3 years ago, if not longer.
Yeah, it was years ago. Could have been slightly longer, but I remember. I don't know. Was it pre the pandemic?
I almost think so. It was a very long time ago.
It was pre the pandemic. Exactly.
Yeah. So, George, I wanted to chat to you today because recently we had a chat with a former car salesman and he gave us some ins and outs and some things that, you know, the car dealership salesman won't really tell you. But with Auto Trader being the biggest online classified site in South Africa, I know you have just a wealth of data that really just explains, you know, trends and buying behavior and all of that. But one of the most important things I wanted to talk to you about today was what should consumers or motorists know about depreciation values when you're buying a car? Can you talk us through that?
So depreciation is an interesting kind of phenomenon, because a product, you know, cars aside for a second, the depreciation of any product is dependent on the future value of that particular thing. Now, you've got to ask yourself, well, what is the future value of a car? What is the future value of a house? What is the future value of this laptop? And the future value is dependent on two things. How can I predict demand? Or how can I predict supply? And if you can predict those two things, you can effectively then predict the price or the value. And the difference between the value today and the value in the future is effectively then the appreciation or the depreciation.
Yeah.
So, and that's why cars are so volatile when it comes to depreciation. There's no linear curve. One vehicle might be in high demand today and low supply, which means that its price is high.
Yeah.
But a Chinese manufacturer might bring a vehicle into the country that competes directly with that particular variant that we're talking about, and then suddenly its demand or popularity drops, independent of supply. Even if supply was the same, its popularity drops, and so effectively its demand drops. And so you start to see that particular vehicle depreciate a lot faster than what you might have predicted into the future based on today's demand and supply. So I like to think about new and used car environment like a stock market. You get peaks and troughs in the values, and those are all dependent on demand and supply, who's buying, who's selling. And you can somewhat predict the value into the future based on today's trends. But the moment something shifts in the market, let's say, like I said, a Chinese vehicle comes into the market at a lower price, similar value, suddenly that vehicle's value will drop.
Okay.
So it's not something that you can in any kind of certainty predict. Now, there are some anomalies, or should I say outliers. For instance, limited edition vehicles. A good example of a limited edition vehicle is the Porsche 911 GT3.
Yeah.
And the reason is because they made them in limited numbers.
Yes.
Because they made them in limited numbers, there's only a certain number of them in the secondhand market. So your demand for those vehicles remains high because the supply remains low.
Yes.
And so the vehicle doesn't depreciate as much. The other thing that is quite important when it comes to depreciation is shape changes. So in the vehicle market, if a vehicle's shape changes fundamentally, its predecessor usually depreciates faster. So in the case of Porsche, as an example, you'll see that the 911 has very, very subtly changed its look. It hasn't really changed fundamentally from its predecessors. And that helps hold the previous model's values up. So limited supply and no fundamental changes. You'll see vehicles like BMW, Mercedes-Benz. They come out with facelifts and changes to the shapes of the vehicles, changes to the options on the vehicles. And the more those enter the market, the more the previous models depreciate.
It's interesting. Sorry, I just wanted to say, it's interesting you say that, because just this morning I was chatting to someone and they were saying that, yes, there's an influx of Chinese cars, but as fast as what they are coming, they're also updating and refreshing them very quickly. So that definitely probably affects, just like you said now, the depreciation value.
It does, and and you can already see it. You know, you look at the Emoda C5 as an example. The Emoda C5 hit the market, I think, in the low 300,000s. You can pick up the Emoda C5 for 285,000-290,000 rand, and so the more updates there are, like the way you put that, the more updates there are to a vehicle, the worse its effect on the depreciation, because the new vehicle becomes the in thing.
So tell me then, just on that, what can ensure you get a good deal on your used vehicle when you're selling or trading?
So, you know, finishing off the depreciation thought, most new vehicles will lose 30 to 40% of their value in the first year. So I think that's quite an important thing to understand is, it doesn't matter what the vehicle is, what make, model, or variant it is. Once you've bought it, within the first year, it will lose a third of its value, likely. And this goes for limited edition vehicles as well. After 3 to 4 years, you'll likely see the vehicle be worth half its value. Okay, so on average, this it's quite a known principle that these things happen. So then, how do you retain the value in the car? So you've got to be cognizant of the fact that you're going to lose money on a car. It depreciates. What causes its depreciation? The major thing that causes a car's depreciation is its mileage. The more mileage you put on a vehicle, the more it's used up, the lower its potential value. Once you've taken that depreciation hit, or the first buyer has taken the depreciation hit, then the other dynamics start to come into play. So the demand, the supply, the future value of the vehicle. So if you've bought a brand new vehicle, it's very difficult to try and retain its value. The best way to do that is to limit its mileage. Now, we don't buy cars to sits in the garage, and so I think it's a little bit of a pointless exercise to buy a car and then not to drive it. So step one is limit its mileage. That's the best way to hold its value. But then you're not enjoying the vehicle, and that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. If you do have a second-hand vehicle, you purchase a second-hand vehicle. Limiting its depreciation can often be how well looked after the vehicle is, and its history records, the historical records of the vehicle, all service histories, whatever is done to the vehicle. If you keep records of all of those, you can often justify why that car should fetch a higher price or not.
Okay, and warranties and so forth, to those, is that a benefit if you have an existing warranty and all of those things?
It's definitely a benefit. So warranties, service plans often hold a vehicle's value up more than ones that don't have service plans and warranties. And the reason for that is peace of mind. The buyer of the second-hand vehicle wants to know that they can drive that vehicle away from you or off the showroom floor and not worry that it's going to break and they are in for the cost. I don't think people worry too much of whether the vehicle breaks. It's more, if the vehicle breaks, am I going to take a financial loss?
Yeah.
And the warranty stops that from happening.
Mara, why would you buy that cute car and not insure it with Santam? You know that's the country's favorite car, and you wouldn't want someone in the streets to borrow it without your consent. Don't let your car go solo. Get Santam's Theft and Hijacking Plus cover for your car. SMS cover to 36101 or call 0860 444 444. Santam, this is freedom. Santam is an authorized financial services provider, a licensed non-life insurer, and controlling company for its group companies.
Let's talk about car scams and car scammers, especially at dealerships or when you're buying a new car. Are there new trends? What should buyers be aware of?
So the biggest car scam in South Africa is probably cloning of vehicles. Yeah. And it's something that I think happens around the world. It's not only in South Africa, but yeah. Cloning of vehicles. So the best way to ensure you're not going to get scammed is obviously buy from a reputable dealer.
Yes.
Make sure that you ask the dealer to check to see that the dealer can see the historical NATIS records of the vehicle, that vehicle's VIN number, registration number, and history bears out what you see on the vehicle, which is the engine number,
yeah.
VIN number, and the registration, and that there's no other vehicles with the same details in the country, because clone vehicles are a big problem.
Yeah. And, I mean, how do people clone vehicles so quickly, though, and so easily? Is it as simple as that VIN number?
I think it's quite a complex thing to do. But the criminal elements in the country have obviously figured out corrupt ways in which to do this. Quite often, a cloned vehicle can be identified because you can't clone every single part of the vehicle, and the original vehicle still exists in the government databases. So it's almost like it's a ruse. It's got the wrong license disc on, it's got the wrong plates on, but if you dig deeper into that vehicle, you'll very quickly see that it's a cloned vehicle.
Yeah.
Because they can't replicate that vehicle in the system.
Yeah. I think people just also need to be a lot more diligent when you are buying a new or used vehicle, and just really do your homework and ask lots of questions and check those little things. I think so many times people go into that and they might just be ignorant about it. So I think it's very important that people really educate themselves before just blindly going in to buy something.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of indicators yeah. of a scam that's about to take place. You know, the biggest indicator is often the price is too good to be true.
Yeah.
And consumers are drawn to, oh, this is a really good deal, or it's, you know, 50, 80, 90,000 rand cheaper than the average vehicle listed elsewhere. Mm. And quite often that price is too good to be true, because it is.
Yeah.
It's a scam waiting to happen. And then quite often the seller of a cloned vehicle, or a seller of a scam, is not willing to meet you in person.
Yeah.
And they often change the goalposts. Mm-hmm. They will say, well, let's meet in a certain location. And then an hour before your meeting, they'll change the location.
Mm.
And that's in order to push you around to ensure that they don't get caught.
Yeah.
They quite often ask you for payment methods that are untraceable.
Okay. And also deposits, like people trying to make you, oh, there's so many people after this car, you should put down like a 5,000 deposit to ensure that the car will be yours, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, you've got to do your homework as a consumer. You can't sit back, get scammed, and say it was entirely the scammer. You got scammed at the end of the day. And if you got scammed, you are part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's right, because it's absolutely wrong and criminal. But there are often markers along the way. Oh, okay, this is what the person did. Didn't you realize that was a scam waiting to happen? they asked you for a 5,000 rand deposit into a non-traceable account.
Yeah.
They asked you for 5,000 rand in cash when you got there. All of those little things kind of indicate something's not right here.
Okay. Thank you for that. We spoke about Chinese cars earlier, and there's just no denying, there's a massive influx. And even though 20 years ago we were saying the same thing about Kias and Hyundais and all of that, but how are all these Chinese cars affecting our auto industry?
So, I mean, like we were talking about earlier on, when it comes to any vehicle in the country, it doesn't matter where that vehicle comes from. It doesn't matter where it's manufactured. The paramount thing is safety. Mm-hmm. So provided it passes all of the safety standards, all of the crash tests, I'm very agnostic when it comes to what vehicles are on the road. I know people say, oh, Chinese vehicles. Why do we want Chinese vehicles on the roads? Well, as you rightly point out, Janine, it happened with the Korean vehicles.
Yeah.
And if you're as old as I am, you'll remember that it happened with the Japanese vehicles too. So, the only crowd that moans about all of this are the German vehicle drivers. Those are the people that complain about Korean, Japanese, and Chinese vehicles. But if you look at Toyota, Toyota has painted Africa absolutely red. Very reliable vehicle, probably one of the best on the road.
Yeah.
And as you point out, Hyundai, exactly the same phenomenon. And now we've got the likes of Haval, Chery, BYD that have entered the market. And the good thing for the South African consumer is that we're getting these vehicles at 60% of the cost of a equal vehicle in other categories, like German vehicles, 60% of the cost, but we're getting 80% of the value in the car.
Right.
The technology, the drivability, the quality of the car is not at 100% of a traditional BMW, Mercedes, or VW, but it's at 80%. And I think it's that delta between 60% of the cost and 80% of the value that really hits the sweet spot of the consumer. So I'm very agnostic when it comes to Chinese vehicles or any other vehicle for that matter, as long as it's good for the South African consumer and it brings down cost but increases value. And that's exactly where the Chinese are playing.
Yeah.
There's better value for money.
I'm glad you talk about that because and the value of money aspect, because most of the new cars coming in, most of the new cars, but especially the Chinese vehicles, are really tech driven. Do you foresee that being a problem in the long run? Is a car being too digital perhaps more prone to more problems?
I think new technology and adopting technology early has its downsides because the technology often doesn't work as well as we'd like it to work. I don't think the technology in the Chinese vehicles are actually much better than the technology in any of the other German vehicles. They have some of the gimmicks that we don't have in some of the German vehicles, but by and large, there's quite a lot of parity across what the German vehicle manufacturers have installed and the Chinese vehicle manufacturers have installed. There are some manufacturers who have fallen behind, like Mazda, for instance.
Yeah.
Mazda have fallen massively behind when it comes to technology in the cars. And so, early adoption of vehicles with more technology could mean that some of that technology falls by the wayside. Like, as an example, if you bought a vehicle, say, 10 years ago, it might have come with a CD front loader.
Mm.
Or a CD cassette, and today that's redundant, totally redundant. And I think the same thing's going to happen with the technology that's in some of these vehicles. Some of it will become redundant. And the reason I say that is because vehicle manufacturers are not software companies.
Yeah.
And they often get it wrong.
Yeah.
because they're not software companies. They try and create this closed ecosystem that just doesn't work. I think one of the vehicle manufacturers that have got it right, in my opinion, is Volvo.
Yes.
Volvo has integrated their cars with the Google platform.
Yeah.
So Android is very, very much integrated into the car's technology. Now, that's a very good partnership because you've got a vehicle manufacturer. They know how to make cars. They know how to make safe cars. They know how to make fast cars. And they say, well, we're not a software provider, so let's just integrate with a software provider, being Google. Right. So that means, and as Google's technology progresses, guess what's going to happen to the Volvo? The Volvo is going to have upgrades all the time, like the Tesla. Tesla, totally different. They're a software company that became a car company. But Volvo's, I think, taken the right approach. Whereas other vehicle manufacturers haven't taken the right approach. They try and write their own software, and I think therein lies the answer to your question, which is adopting this early technology could mean that the technology becomes redundant and there's very little updates, etc.
An interesting fact about that, I love Volvo's electric cars, but I was test driving an EX30 and I just received the car and I was probably driving about a week or two and all of a sudden the key wouldn't work. So it's got this little fob, you know what the Volvo keys are like, it's a little rectangle, there's no buttons on it because Volvo's, you approach the car, you walk away, it locks itself, that kind of thing. And then I called the fleet manager and he said, so the car's had an update recently and it affected the battery of the key. So I had to go back in and have an update on the key. So, you know, like it might not need an oil change, but there are little things I get with these modern cars. But talking about electric cars, you were quite an advocate for electric vehicles a while ago, and you bought an iPace.
I did.
Do you still have it? And what is your stance about electric vehicles now? Or what was your experience with your iPace?
So I absolutely loved my Jaguar iPace. I wish that I could have kept it. It's probably up there in one of the top cars I've ever experienced. And the reasons were as follows. One, and it wasn't the speed. The speed is probably second or third.
Yeah.
But the biggest draw card for this Jaguar I-Pace that I had was its absolute silence inside.
Yeah.
There is something about driving an electric vehicle in that silence that just is almost zen.
Yeah.
It's almost like meditating, and then the technology in the car, the lane keep assist, adaptive cruise control, all worked really, really well. I had the first generation iPace, so it wasn't second generation, so it still had the old interface and the old software, but it still worked very well.
Yes.
And a very well put together car. It was solid. I'd say its build quality was likely better than the first Teslas that hit the market because it was Jaguar. Yes. So very sorry to have seen the car go. But the reason I sold the car was because I started to see its depreciation curve. Mm. Fortunately, I work for Auto Trader, so I'm in the thick of all the data, so I can see when a car's depreciating. And so I decided to get out of the vehicle because I saw what was happening to the depreciation on electric vehicles. And unfortunately, electric vehicle depreciation is not at parity with internal combustion engine vehicles.
Yeah.
Internal combustion engine vehicles still hold their value much better than an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. If you get yourself into a secondhand electric vehicle, I would say that's probably the sweet spot.
Okay.
Because a new electric vehicle seems to depreciate much faster than a secondhand electric vehicle, but a secondhand electric vehicle still depreciates faster than a internal combustion engine vehicle on average. And I think the reasons for this is because of the battery.
Yeah.
Consumers are not yet very trusting of the battery, and the battery is more than half of the cost of the car.
Yeah.
And I think people are still nervous of whether the battery can last the lifetime of the vehicle or not.
Yeah. I could chat to you forever. You're so knowledgeable. But thank you so much for coming into studio today and sharing all your insights with us. It was very, very valuable.
Good. It was really good to see you again, Janine, and Chelsea and team. And it's been very good to be on your show.
Thank you very much. So that's it. Thanks for joining us for another episode with Driving with J9.
Marawai, why did you think a plastic bag and tape was a solid window replacement after that smash and grab? And why does it sound like a kite every time you hit over 60Ks? Marawai, why aren't you insured with Santam, the insurer that covers theft or attempted hijacking? Get your car covered online in just 2 minutes or SMS cover to 36101. Santam, this is freedom. T's and C's apply. Santam is an authorized FSP, a licensed non-life insurer, and controlling company for its group companies.